It is Saturday, September 15th, 2007, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, the week in geek news, instant messaging with Meepo.com.
The bandwidth for GeekSpeak.org is provided by GNI, GNIHosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. On this episode of Geek Speak, we're talking about instant messaging with CEO of Meepo.com, a site that coalesces all of your instant messaging services. During the second half of the show, I'll welcome you to join the conversation. Phone numbers, 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can contact us right now. Just go to geekspeak.org. I'll give out that information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Drew Meyer, product manager at Network Appliance. Morning, Drew.
Morning, Lyle.
Miles Elam, Slacker geek and student and owner of a new iPhone. Morning, Miles.
Good morning.
Ryder Brooks, support engineer at Sun Microsystems.
Hello.
And Sean Cleveland, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA.
Good morning, Lyle.
So, before we get in our discussion with the CEO of Meepo all about instant messaging, let's do some geek news. Drew.
No, not me. Not ready yet.
Drew, you were just traveling.
I've been in Chicago the last week.
You've been working?
I've been working. I was working with a big reseller out there, Computer Discount Warehouse, CDW. Everybody knows them probably.
CDWG. We use them a lot at UCSC.
CDWG is the government branch, yeah. Mm-hmm. Great company. Great place, Chicago. Man, we went and saw Hemingway's house where he was born. We went and saw Frank Lloyd Wright in the museum there. First 20 years of his life spent there. Went and saw the Millennium, the great big bean, the Millennium Park. Went to the top of the John Hancock Building, had a drink.
This is a work thing, but you brought your wife along? I mean,
One of those things where you can get me out there, and then we bring her out along with me.
It's such a great thing to be able to travel and vacation while on the budget. All right, next news. Well, let's go ahead and start the news. Miles.
Yes, sir. There is a very interesting article about NBC's recent withdrawal from the iTunes store. For many folks, this has been a big power play between some heavy hitters. NBC having some of the most popular shows on TV, and or at least responsible for publishing them, such as Battlestar Galactica, Heroes, and the like. And iTunes Store is now one of the largest distributors of such content. Now,
this is paid for television at the iTunes Store. Now, iTunes Store is normally music, but they also branched out to movies and
They do movies, TV, some paid for podcasts, even though ours is free.
So, what's the problem? You can buy an NBC TV show, but no longer?
Well, you could on iTunes Store. And NBC decided, I mean, it depends on who you talk to, but many people believe that Apple is has too much power in that area, and/or they're not. NBC wants them to charge more for their shows, and Apple is resisting that, trying to make them more uniform in price. Mm-hmm. And so NBC is looking to just completely pull out, which is to hurt NBC because they won't have this great deliverability method. And Apple, it's going to hurt because they're going to lose some of their most popular shows. Mm-hmm. At the same time, if NBC withdraws from iTunes, where are people going to get those shows? And a lot of pundits are suggesting that they're going to be moving toward BitTorrent to what's commonly known as piracy. In other words, they're not going to give any money, and they're just going to take it.
Right. The reason iTunes, theoretically, is so popular is it's so cheap and easy to get the media.
Right. It is easier and simpler to do the right thing.
Than steal it from somewhere else. Sean, did you have a point on this?
I just think it's interesting, poor NBC is just
they should be good for the consumer. They should really think about the consumer. But then again, Apple, all they want to do is sell hardware. So it's not even their best interest to actually, you know, make a lot of money off the shows, right? They want to bring the price of the shows down to bring more content into their devices they sell.
So more people buy the iPhones or iPods. Yeah.
It's really interesting. And then Hulu.com is supposed to come around later this year from NBC. And they say they're going to work with Amazon. But, you know, the bottom line is who actually buys this stuff and watches it on their computer? And how many people own media centers that are hooked up to their big screen televisions in their living room?
Right.
I mean, it's people who own iPhones and iPods who are watching this content. Yeah. I have a lot of friends who own iPods. They load them up, you know. And,
with their television shows.
Yeah, and then when they're on the bus or they're on the train or they're traveling or they're waiting in line at a store, you know.
That's when they watch their
TV. That's when they're watching their shows, yeah.
Sure. So you're saying that why would Hulu be a problem in that regard?
I'm just wondering, you know, NBC might go to these alternative places, but how are us consumers supposed to take advantage of those services? I'm wondering, will iPod work with it? I mean, Miles, have you heard much about this? What's going to happen with content from NBC? If it can't go to Apple, you know?
Last I had heard, they were looking at starting up their own service.
Hulu. So you can get
sure. Yeah.
Yeah, Hulu.
But I'm doubtful that it'll be successful because one thing, the power of iTunes, the iTunes store, is the fact that everyone, it's kind of like Amazon. You go there because everyone knows to go there. And not everyone knows to go to the NBC site. They may just say, you know.
Yeah.
It works because it's a mass market. The other thing is, you're right, Sean, on the whole technical aspect. If you buy a video file from some other site and you have it on your computer, then you have to import it into iTunes to then sync it to your iPod or iPhone.
You might
and that
have
is that
to convert
technical
it.
Step. And you might have to convert it. And that technical step is going to restrict people from doing things.
Yeah.
I started watching, I think, Battlestar Galactica because iTunes had the trailer for free. It got me hooked to that show. So it's interesting, and it was only because I was using iTunes. Now I'm an unusual user. I don't have television at home, but still, it's interesting that NBC thinks that they need to do this. A lot of people are saying that it's really just a power play, that they really want just a better deal from iTunes or from Apple. All right. Well, thank you very much, Miles and Sean, for that. Writer, I'd like to go to you, the next news story, sir.
Okay. Now, I'm no physicist, but I found this article to be rather interesting. It was a discussion about a photonic laser thruster, which is a new kind of aeronautical propulsion system for outer space, basically using photons and lasers to amplify photonic momentum. It's interesting that Dr. Young Bae, who's a California physicist, had built this demonstration they call it a PLT device. I guess he invented it. And it's kind of cool. How it works is they uses a laser system that bounces a photonic laser back and forth between mirrors. And as it bounces back and forth, it amplifies the thrust built by the photons. And his intention is to use it for a tethering system in outer space. So you have these satellites tethered together, but they basically, it's just this really precise control that can be used with these laser thrusters. So you have this formation of satellites in outer space that are, I guess, physically tethered together, but then they're repulsed by bouncing this laser back and forth between them, and it creates, you know, consistent thrust and you know, distance from one another. And one of the more interesting things that I read about this was that they discussed that in theory this model for this type of thruster could actually propel spaceships to like Mars in like a week.
Why is that? Because it has so much thrust?
Yeah, well, if you amplify it, and it's basically it's a non-propellant basically, so you don't need a propellant to, you know, propel somebody into outer space. It just uses, presumably, you know, electricity to generate the laser.
I'm fascinated because, of course, photons have no mass at rest, and therefore
they have no charge, but they have momentum essentially.
I'm interesting how you can get kinetic energy out of that. Okay, I'll have to read up on the article. So we'll link that article and the scientists do again. This is
Dr. Young Bae.
All right, cool. Yeah. Dr. Bae. All right, thank you very much, writer. Drew.
So in a move or an interesting story for all of us folks that are here in Santa Cruz, although I don't even know if SCO has a presence in Santa Cruz any longer, They have announced that they're filing Chapter 11 to protect their assets. And you can read all about the details in a phenomenal level at groklaw.net, naturally, where the press release content is and where, more importantly, some of the people who are still owed money that SCO is now taking steps to not pay, or at least to put off paying in terms of a reorganization, is listed out very clearly. Naturally, I think it, and I don't know if you've covered this story in a while, but I used to really follow it closely, really was really into it. The Novell essentially won their lawsuit, or hasn't had to go to court yet, but they're in such a strong position that there is not going to be a trial any longer with this filing of the Chapter 11. And Novell is owed money, owed royalties by SCO. The whole company is essentially, well, I guess this kind of means they've disappeared. They still exist, but I think they've closed their office. Does anybody know? Do they still have an office in Scotts Valley here?
They do not have an
they
office.
They do not. So they've
people that were in the Scotts Valley office are either got laid off or work from home.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Right, you left SCO just enough time, right?
Well, I worked for SCO after they closed their Scotts Valley office. I worked from home. Uh-huh. But yeah, I left a couple of months ago, right before this all kind of fell apart.
So pretty interesting. The Santa Cruz operation is no longer in Santa Cruz.
Are you thinking that...
Except for home offices.
They don't even consider themselves Santa Cruz operation. It's just called the SCO Group. They're not even an acronym anymore.
Is Novell going to get some money out of this company?
Well, I don't think... Okay, this is Drew's opinion of the world, right? This counts for nothing. But I think realistically, nobody should be waiting for any money to come out of SCO.
Okay.
I mean, there's millions and millions of dollars that are owed, and you can see the top 20 people that are owed. The number one company is owed $500,000. So it's a pretty big number to come up with when you don't have any products and you've laid off all your engineering groups, mostly.
Dr. Dawn just left, and she just wanted to mention that there's a physician's art show at the Santa Cruz Art League, 526 Broadway, this weekend, Saturdays from 12 to 5 and Sunday from 12 to 4. And Dr. Dawn actually has several sculptures on exhibit. So that's, again, at the Santa Cruz Art League this weekend. You can see some of Dr. Dawn's artwork. I didn't even know she had sculptures, so that's kind of cool. Thanks, Dawn, for sharing that. On one more news story, I believe. We might have a cover for two. And Sean, you want to do next news story, sir?
I thought we might want to talk about Google sponsoring a $30 million moon challenge.
Yeah.
This past week, Google put up a really big incentive. At least it seems like a big incentive. So to get some sort of a device sent to the moon, probably with wheels.
Oh, this is the rover contest.
And camera.
Right. Yeah.
They've got specific things they want this thing to do.
Including broadcast content, right?
Yeah. It's got to actually reach the moon and land. It needs to travel at least 500 meters on the surface before sending at least 1 gigabyte of images and videos back to researchers from the moon. It must have high-definition video and still cameras to meet minimum requirements. And I don't know, $30 million. I think it was $680 million to send the two to Mars.
That's all it costs to get the rovers to Mars? I guess that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. some people think it may be closer, you know.
I think it's interesting.
$500 million just to do this to the moon right now with that kind of equipment.
Yeah, and in the project, they talk about you don't have to build your own propellant to get out of Earth's gravity well, but you can actually lease different companies' jets. So you don't have to make everything, basically.
Right.
You just have to do it. And this is one of those things where traditionally these contests, the actual expenditure of doing the work is more than the prize. But it's an incentive for people to start competing with each other and to do it anyway.
I don't think it's enough incentive.
You don't think so?
No, not for the serious. The people who can actually get it done, $30 million is not going to be enough.
It was enough for the XPRIZE for $10 million to get someone up into orbit. This doesn't require a human being to be handled safely.
And they in the XPRIZE that did the human orbit thing, they spent more money than the $10 million prize. It wasn't like it paid for it, but it was an incentive for a few companies to attempt it. Maybe those companies would do it anyway.
I'm just saying, I personally don't think it's enough. But maybe other companies will chip in.
Regardless,
they have until 2012 to complete the required tasks to get the prize. Actually, the prize, from what I understand, is $20
million. It's like incentives or something.
There's a $5 million bonus to the company responsible for successfully landing on the moon and taking pictures. They're offering secondary prizes and other things I don't think so, get it on it,
come on.
I don't think it's $30 million
Santa Cruz
for
Pride.
One person.
Well, you know, Central Coast Pride.
People need to start just like using off-the-shelf components and really build it in their garage and something cheap.
I think the press value of winning that is worth a couple million bucks anyway. I mean, when you look at the Ansari X Prize, there was a ton of buzz generated around when it was announced and then when it was actually achieved. So if I had a bunch of money kicking around and I wanted to build a lunar rover, I would consider it a little more seriously now.
Well said. Good said.
Rough morning.
One other thing. Why is Google doing this? Just because they have more money than God and they can, or because it's a good interest for them? Does anyone have an idea of why?
Why does Google do anything? Why do they publish map data for free? So, why do they map the sky for free?
Well, from what I understand, they got their private runway at NASA.
Oh, yeah. Boeing deal, yeah.
At Moffett Fields, just a few miles away from their offices. That was kind of special.
Why did they get a runway?
They've rented. There's a little bit of discussion about this in the private sector. They've paid the government to have access to Moffett Field, which is a private government airstrip, for their corporate jets.
Which is the 767.
Or a NASA airstrip, yeah.
Yeah, not in the private sector.
Okay.
Government funded.
That's really disturbing.
So how come a private company can pay their way into government utility like that?
Well, actually, the government, for its part, is using their planes for scientific experiments. They're actually taking them up and using them for experiments. They say they don't have access to these types of planes that Google has. And they've actually already done this, they say. So if it's for scientific experiments, I can see where that might.
I think it's fascinating. I mean, Google's policy in hiring staff is, you know, you're a PhD, you're extremely intelligent, probably well-connected, and you come and work with us. It's almost like a think tank that has a profit. You know, it's interesting. We should probably talk about the bad things about Google sometimes, because we seem to always be talking about how wonderful they are. In any case,
that's hard to argue with. When you pull out your phone and you find a map to wherever you need to go for free, that's so cool.
And then I think it's a spoof. Google put up a website. They're hiring lunar jobs, people who can work on the moon at their new lunar base. So go to Google and Google job opportunities, lunar jobs. Yes, Google.
Didn't they have a joke site where you could get Google Maps for the moon, and when you zoomed in really close, I think Sean, you sent that.
Yeah, turned into cheese.
That was hilarious.
Maybe they want to find out if the moon is really cheese.
All right, listen to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. With me in the air room, handling the geek news, Miles Elam, Ryder Brooks, Drew Meyer, Sean Cleveland. Thank you, geeks, very much for doing the news with me. Meepo.com, currently we all are chatting with this service called Meepo, and luckily for us, Drew set up this wonderful interview with us. Seth, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Seth is the CEO of Meepo.com and co-founder, and it's pretty successful, I would say.
Well, that's one of the questions I want to ask. Seth, tell us about what it is and how you got the idea first, would you, for our audience?
Sure. So Meepo is a website for instant messaging, so it just lets you get online and chat with all your friends on your buddy list live. It works with AOL, Yahoo, Microsoft, Messenger, etc. We got the idea because Elaine, Sandy, and I were the three founders. We're working on other startup projects, and we kind of would build something and then kill it because we just didn't think we did a good enough job to actually launch it. But we had this constant problem where we'd be in each other's houses, unable to get on IM, and we're like, why is that? And then we realized it was simply because there was no web IM that was really good. And so we're like, well, wait a second, everything has moved to the web, like communities moved to the web with social networks and commerce has moved to the web with, you know, Amazon and eBay. Why has instant communication not gone there yet? And so that's what we're working on.
So the cool thing about this is it's from any place you have a web browser, you can log into Meepo and you can talk to anyone else, and it doesn't matter anymore whether you're on Yahoo or AIM or MSN. That's right?
Yep. You can just use your, you know, your existing ID and password from AIM or Yahoo or multiple networks if you want to. And it doesn't matter where you are. You can be in your office, at school, at home, traveling, as long as you've got a web browser and an internet connection.
Is the site supported? I mean, the reason why you're able to do the site is that all of these protocols are available and kind of open so you can communicate with them?
I heard about Meepo from a friend and switched, I used Trillion, which has kind of the same idea, but it's still a client. So you guys made a big shift there, shifting away from the client. And
How do you
deal with the protocol problem, like Lyle asks?
Yeah, sure. So it's actually really interesting. One of the very few places left in the internet that is not officially open is instant messaging. And so all of like AOL, Yahoo, Microsoft, their protocols are open in the sense that a lot of programs have interacted with them. But the official, you know, rule from AOL, Microsoft, and Yahoo is that they don't officially sanction other clients on top of their networks. So originally Trillion, which you just mentioned, came out, and Trillion interopted with their networks, and AOL kind of said, oh, we don't really like that, and there was kind of a cat-and-mouse game between Trillion and AOL. But at some point, I think AOL realized, well, wait a second, you know, why are we kind of fighting this? Why not just allow it? It probably gets more people on our network anyhow. So the official rule hasn't yet changed, but there are probably 100-plus programs that interop with their networks.
And you're just a web service program. The client application part is actually on your web servers.
Yeah, exactly. There is no download software into Mevo at all. And, you know, we talk to AOL, Microsoft, and Yahoo a lot. Right. Now, you guys were just talking about Google. They are officially open. So Google said, you know, we've got Google Talk. We want as many people to use it as possible. Please, everyone, write programs which sit on top of our network.
Now, they use Jabber as their protocol.
They do. That's correct.
Do you use Jabber for Mevo? Can I use a Jabber client attached to your... Because you also have an account set up as well.
Yep. You can create accounts on Mevo. The accounts on Mevo give you a lot of extra functionality. They're predominantly designed, though, to still let you log into like an AIM or a Yahoo.
Okay. So just to save your information kind of thing.
Exactly. You can save chat logs.
But you also have chatting capabilities through the usernames of your Mevo account, correct?
That is correct.
But we have
Mevo Rooms and Mevo Me, which are two things that are on Mevo's Jabber network. We also use Jabber, just like Google does.
This is GeekSpeak. We're talking with Seth Sternberg. He is the CEO and co-founder of Mebo.com. If you want to see what we're talking about in your online, go to Mebo.com and find out all about it. But let's go ahead and back up a second for those people that aren't online. What is instant messaging?
So instant messaging is just a kind of window that comes up on your computer that has a list of all of your friends. And you can double-click on any of your friends on that list and just start typing to them back and forth in real time.
Now, when I first heard about instant messaging, I thought to myself, so what? I have email. And then I started using it, and it blew me away. It completely changed how I communicate with people.
Yep. In fact, 90% of U.S. teens use instant messaging. So it's probably the dominant form of instant communication between especially teens in America. It's just because you can have 8 conversations at once, right? I mean, you can have like 8 windows open on your desktop, talk to 8 people, and all of them are live conversations. And you can actually keep that straight in your head.
But that doesn't sound very productive from a business perspective.
Hey, man, I have a team in India, and this is one of the most efficient ways for me to communicate with them because I can't always get them on the phone. Cell phone lines are – the landlines are not reliable. The cell phones are not always charged or not in their hand or whatever. But I can ping them on Yahoo or AOL or whatever they have, and I've got a response right away.
Yep.
Around the world. It's amazing. In real time, like as fast as I can hit enter, they get the message and reply.
I ran into a coworker that managed a different department at UCSC, and she was noticing that her employees were using chat, and she found it like her concern was that this is a way of not working while you look like you're working.
Mm-hmm.
Can you address that?
Yeah, so what's interesting is IBM and Microsoft, a bunch of companies, have put out instant messaging products tailored to the enterprise. The big difference between those products and kind of IM for consumers is just that those log conversations mostly for SEC purposes in the financial sector. But enterprises have mostly come around to that it's very, very efficient to have instant messaging because it lets your, you know, people be working on that Word document and then have that quick little question they have to ask someone. They fire off an IM, they get an answer in 30 seconds. Right, so it doesn't interrupt their workflow. They keep productive. They don't have to pick up a phone, dial a number. It's well more efficient to ask quick questions back and forth.
We're talking with Seth Sternberg. He's the CEO of Mebo.com. We're going to continue the conversation. We have a lot of questions for him. GeekSpeak is just in just a moment. GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, Notary Public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. You're listening to GeekSpeak. We're now taking your calls with questions and comments of technology about instant messaging and Mevo. The numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. One more time, those numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free in California, 1-800-655-5877. If you'd like to send us an email, go ahead and go to geekspeak.org. Stay tuned. with KOSP for Castle Cottage this morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, Drew Meyer, Ryder Brooks. Answering the phones at 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877 is Rick Fillman. We are all talking today with the CEO of Meebo.com, all about instant messaging. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Cruise.io, providing local internet services including DSL, computer care, classes, and website builders. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at Cruise.io.com or by calling 459-630-01. Drew, I think you had a question?
Oh, just for Seth, let's take the conversation in a little bit of a different direction. You have a title of CEO, but I never paid anything to get to use Meebo here.
Mm-hmm.
So how does the business model work?
Sure. So we actually just launched our advertising model maybe 3 weeks ago now. The reason we waited that long is that we really wanted to make sure that when we did put ads into Meebo, that it added value to the user experience as opposed to being distracting and not part of the product. And so what we're now doing is we're promoting initially music albums, and that's going to branch out pretty soon, right on our page that kind of everybody looks at as they log into Meebo. And they can choose things like, oh, I want to set the Kanye West background screen. I want to set the Kanye West buddy icon. I want to go into the Kanye Meebo room and listen to his new album in the Meebo room. So from the folks over at Rockefeller, Kanye's record label, they think it's great because they get lots of interaction of our users with all of this Kanye memorabilia, and then we also, of course, can send people over to the Kanye website. For us, it's fantastic, and for our users, it's fantastic because they get these fun things to play with at Meebo that are part of the product.
So there's an observation I got to make. You're moving this from philosophically from being just a simple instant messenger connection to a community.
Oh yeah, this is Meebo is all about the really neat stuff you can do with live communication in the web. So when we went, and it's kind of funny, if you look at our first slides that we pitched to the VCs, we said, well, the first part is to create a really, really great web instant messaging client because people want that and they understand that. The next part is to let certain pieces of that get out into the internet. And that's what Meebo Rooms are, and that's what Meebo Me are, and people like CBS and Sony Jive Records and Island Def Jam all use Meebo Rooms, branded Meebo. There's the next part, which is, you know, we're not talking about yet, but it's going to come up pretty soon. But it's all about what can you do with live communication in the web, not just traditional IM.
Very cool. So tell us about Meebo Me a little bit. When I first got onto Meebo, I didn't really understand what that was. I don't happen to use it today, but mm-hmm. I'm not a web guy. So
sure. Meebo Me was a kind of simple concept. It was just if someone is visiting your blog, if someone is visiting your MySpace page, they should be able to instant message with you without having to, like, sign into an IM client, you know, get on a network, yada, yada. And so anyone who has a blog or a MySpace page or whatever can just take an IM window, which we call Meebo Me, throw it right on their blog, and anyone who's visiting their page can just start sending them instant messages.
Put this in context for us. One of the things we always are trying to deal with is how to get feedback from our end users, essentially, our audience. How do we get people to be able to talk to us right away in real time while we're on the air?
Yep.
Meebo Me be a good choice for that?
Absolutely. In fact, we have a bunch of radio stations. I have friends who live in Atlanta, friends who live in Houston, and they're like, oh, we just heard Meebo on the radio. And it's because the DJs there are saying, hey, come to our website and chat with us live. And so some of them are using Meebo Me so that anyone who visits the radio station website can just send instant messages to DJs. Other people are using Meebo Rooms, which is just a live chat room that you can put on a website so that all the listeners can talk to each other.
Let's to show what we're talking about, you can go ahead and go to Alex. Alex's website, Alex Slias, who's a general geek that's always on chat with us while we're doing the show. You can go to beardeddragon.com and see what Alex's stuff's about, but also see the chat interface that is on his website embedded that allows you to chat with him while you're visiting. It's kind of like somebody being there when you visit a website. We talked previously, and you said that you've got about 6 million users using Meebo every 30 days or something like that. Can you talk a little bit about your numbers and what that means?
Sure. So about 6 million, like you said, 6 million people use Meebo every 30 days, and that grows rather fast, like especially now that school's getting back in session, we're watching it grow real quick. Those people spend on average 2.5 hours with us every day. So we have these really incredible user times. We actually capture about 250 years of people's time every day.
Now, is that I got to ask, being a marketing guy, is that based on the logins that you're tracking or actual chat time?
That is an absolutely fantastic question. So the distinction that you're drawing is, if people are sitting there but they're not looking at the screen, does it really count? And so 43% of the time that people are logged into Mebo, this is all, of course, average numbers, we are the front screen that they're looking at. So we have really, really high engagement with our users every day. And it's just because you have to make the conscious choice. I want to log into Mebo. I want to talk to someone right now. We don't just start on startup.
I wanted to make a correction. It's beardeddragon.org, which is Alex's site, beardeddragon.org. You can see Mebo in action, the Mebo Me thing in action. These numbers that you're giving are just amazing numbers for websites. But for instant messaging in general, isn't that pretty common for instant messaging as an application?
What is very common for instant messaging are the numbers. Absolutely. In fact, we are small in the instant messaging space. We're a very young company, and we have a long way to grow in terms of growing into the market. 500 million people worldwide do instant messaging. In terms of the user kind of times, so we have smaller sessions per day, again, because we don't just start when you turn your machine on. We're a website. We're not software.
Right. Yes.
But our interaction times are way, way, way higher. Again, because you have to make the conscious effort to get into Mebo. The other big difference is that we do, fortunately, get the whole screen since we're a website. And so that goes directly to all the really cool stuff we can do, like Mebo Rooms, like the advertising that's really high impact. Because it's a website where all that kind of cool stuff is happening these days, as opposed to software where there's less kind of neat content to put in front of people.
We're talking to Seth Sternberg, the CEO and co-founder of Mebo.com, about instant messaging. And I wanted to take a little tally around the room and stuff. I'm assuming that all of the geeks use instant messaging regularly?
Yes, as a part of work and personal.
And Sean, do you use it for work?
No.
No for work. Miles, have you used it for work in the past?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
But you're not working right now, so I can't even ask that. And Ryder, you currently work for – do you use it, son, as part of your job?
Yeah, we don't use Mebo, but we do use Yahoo Chat, and I pretty much, you know, during the day, I'm communication with everybody on every known protocol that there is. And just
we chat throughout the day.
But
do you all think that it can be a distraction from your work?
Yes.
Yes, but the thing is discipline, right? I get distracted by email 24/7. It comes in on my phone. It trickles into my from around the world all the time, all day long, every day. So it's a matter of discipline. When that chat, one of the nice things about Mebo is it doesn't shove a window right in my face. It just sits there quietly on the browser until I get around to it going there. And so I can manage who I answer back to when. You don't have to be a slave to it.
For me, it can go either way. I mean, we use it as a kind of virtual, you know, water cooler, you know, chat room. But it's also indispensable for sharing information that we need for day-to-day for working.
Yeah. Seth's example was spot on for me. Like, constantly I'm writing a piece of information or synthesizing something or working with the press or whatever, and I need to know a technical detail right away, like even in real time on a telephone. So I'll ping an engineer, and I'll get an answer back right then, and I can go on with my work. I don't have to wait. I don't have to close down what I'm doing, send an email, wait for the response, keep going.
You're listening to Geek Speak. We're taking your calls with questions and comments of technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-KUSP. And we are talking about instant messaging today. And I want to go ahead and get some people that aren't familiar with it and want to know a little bit more about instant messaging, or also are a little bit more, I don't know, concerned that it's a problem. Because I have a feeling that there's a bit of an age gap here. Seth, when you were talking about your numbers earlier, 6 million people using it, just your site, that's not even instant messaging in general, 14 to 25-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
So your demographic is a younger demographic.
Definitely a younger demographic. We have folks of all ages, obviously, who use it. And I'll tell you, there are some really interesting markets that just love Mebo, like librarians. Not only do they email us and tell us they love Mebo, they teach Mebo in seminars for librarians.
Why?
They love it because they can put it on the computers in the library and anyone can use instant messaging on those computers in the library where they can't put software on them.
Because it's web-based.
Exactly. The other thing they do is they use MeeboMe, and they just put that little window on every computer in the library, and they just tell the patrons, if you have any questions for us, just IM us from the computer. You don't have to come up and ask us at the desk.
Slick. So now what about security? I remember when instant messaging was first happening in corporate environments, sometimes IT groups would shut down the ports through the firewall for instant messenger, and it was a real pain. And now that's no longer an issue, right?
With us, it's not an issue. In fact, there are a fair number of companies that we've heard of who sent an email to all their employees and said, the only approved method for instant messaging is Meebo, because we don't open any other port into the computer other than the normal web browser port, port 80.
And I just saw that you've added, or you're in beta for file transfers?
Yep. So we put file transfer in probably 4 days ago. It was a huge user request. We really build Meebo based on what the users want.
What's the size limitation?
So 30 megabytes per month right now per user is the limit. And then we may up that in the future. We're just looking at how the costs scale, how many people use it, et cetera.
That's pretty cool. Hey, Miles, you have an iPhone, right?
Yes, I do.
Does it work with your iPhone?
I actually, to be completely honest, I tried to connect up to Meebo this morning and ran into some problems. But I think that may be due to the fact that the URL changed. I wasn't aware of it. Changed from www.meebo.com to www.m.
Hmm. Yeah, if you just go straight to www.meebo.com, it'll figure out the right URL and then put you there.
How do you get to a group? Like currently we have a group name that we all try to share, but it seems to be kind of difficult to tell Miles the URL for that group name.
Yep. Because you guys set your group as a private group, that isn't given a easy way to get in from the outside, because the default assumption is you want it to be very private. You don't want it to be on any public servers. Any public group just gets a URL, meebo.com/room/whatever the name of that room is. And anyone could just enter it.
So one thing we could do is make a public Geek Speak room, and every weekend or every weekday, people could go in there and chat with us during the show.
Exactly.
We'll have to have two rooms so that we can talk about
we can filter
flow
one.
At the same time.
Right.
Because sometimes we're a little crass in our chat room. We're going to go to Big Sur now. Nick, welcome to Geek Speak. Hello, Nick. Do you have a question today?
Hi there. Yes, I do. I'm a Skype user. And I didn't catch the beginning of this show, but I'm not sure whether Skype fits in with the other IM applications and will work with Meebo in the same way. And if not, what is the difference? Yeah.
Seth, you want to address that?
Yeah, sure. That's a great question. So Skype is actually architected in a very different way from the other IM networks. It's a purely peer-to-peer application. And so you'll notice that Skype doesn't have one of their own web clients, and we also don't support Skype. And it's because it is very, very difficult to make Skype a web-based application given their architecture.
I get it, yeah.
Yep.
I see. Okay, thank you. One other quick question then. I don't know if the term shoutbox is common here.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is the same sort of thing as MeeboMe.
What is Shoutbox?
Okay, so this is on a UK-based house music website. They have a little IM box. Anybody listening to the show, the internet radio show, can talk to the DJs instantly. It sounds...
So, Seth, that's what you've been talking about with the music websites, right?
Yep. Shoutboxes are pretty similar to what we call Meebo Rooms. The biggest difference, really, is that in Meebo Rooms, there are two differences. One is, let's say you throw a YouTube URL or a Flickr URL or whatever into a Meebo Room. That video or picture or MP3 will play live for everybody in the room. Oh, so Meebo Rooms are very media-rich. The other difference is that Meebo Rooms can be put on 1,000 different sites, and it could be one room that links all those sites together. So if you had like the GeekSpeak room on the GeekSpeak.org website, you could have your listeners take that room and put it on their sites too, and it would be one conversation that connects 100 websites together live.
That's pretty cool.
Sweet.
I put Meebo earlier in the week on my personal website and then decided to take it down because I was concerned about not being responsive to people in that group. Like, you have to have a community around it. Because, like, if you take the geeks that represent GeekSpeak, there's like 9 of us or something like that. If you have the chat room up, one of us is going to be online all the time, so there's always going to be someone there. So it's going to be active. But on my personal website, it could be down quite a bit. You know, so definitely community makes sense. You're listening to GeekSpeak. Oh, and thank you so much, Nick, for the call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nick from Big Sur talking about Skype. And the thing about Skype is it's been very popular. Skype, of course, is more focused around voice communication. And I'm assuming that – and chat and voice are very different. Voice is – I mean, it has the effect of phone. But with instant messaging, if you're not familiar with instant messaging, it really is another way to communicate with people and carry on multiple conversations but not be distracted by them. It's a really quite – interesting way of communicating. I'm on it all the time, and I feel I use it relatively effective even while I'm at work. We're talking with the CEO of Meebo.com, which coalesces instant messaging into one web interfaces and adds media-rich content that's applicable to the chat that you're currently having, which I'm actually having a little problem with. But I've noticed we included, for about 2 months, we've had Meebo.com as our chatting features for the GeekSpeak site, or GeekSpeak running the show. We have Rick Philman, who's in a different room than us, answers the phones at 476-2800 and pipes them into us. But before he pipes it in, he tells us who's on the phone. And so all of us, while we're in this chat, can see that. And we actually have invited in Seth, our guest today, who's the founder of Meebo.com, to join us as well. And he's chatting with us as well. It's kind of a trying to get a feel for what it's like through the radio. And that's a good description.
Yeah, I mean, what we need to do is put a sample up on GeekSpeak, and we should have done that for this show, naturally, but we may adopt this going forward.
Yeah, and if you want to see a sample, bearddragon.org. Did anyone have the more direct URL to the chat? For
Yeah, it's bearddragon.org/... I forgot it now. Chat, I just went away from it. Alex, so here's an example, right?
/chatroom.
Chatroom. So Alex, quickly, send me the URL through IM.
Right. Now, Alex, of course, is listening to our feed through our MP3 feed, which is about 20 seconds delayed. So it's going to take him a second. The phone numbers, if you'd like to ask us anything you'd like, the phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Miles, you had a question?
Well, through the course of this, I've been connecting up to Meebo through my iPhone now. And something I do find interesting about this is that they've obviously detected that I'm using an iPhone to connect to the site.
Why do you say that?
Because the formatting is different than on the main site. And when I connect up, it just shows me the buddy list. Now, Seth, that said, it seems like if I want to do any real configuration, I need to do it in a normal web browser before I come back because
Seth,
I can't see how to do
Seth,
any
what
options.
Do you think?
Yep, that's totally true. We auto-detect iPhones, and then we just go ahead and give people the right version of Meebo.
Yeah, but it also means I can't connect up to our private chat room through
my
iPhone.
Because you
that
have,
is true.
Yeah. Now, when I log into Meebo, my list of users and all my different accounts and everything, the first one is Meebo Rooms, and there's 2 rooms, and there's the GeekSpeak room. So I just double-click on it. So you make a Meebo account.
No, but I mean by URL, directly by URL that I would use in the web browser, I can't do on the iPhone.
That's too bad. All right, we are taking questions with comments of technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800.
What are the drawbacks, Seth? What's hard for you guys as a company, and what are your kind of your requests from your end users for feature enhancements?
Sure. Well, what's probably most difficult, believe it or not, in a web environment is doing really good visual notifications to users. So, because of the security model of a web browser, we can't even get the tab at the bottom of the start bar in Windows to blink if a new message comes in.
That's right. I've seen that with other clients. And you can blink the tab in the browser. Right?
Inside the browser on Firefox or IE, yes. But we can't. So if you're in Microsoft Word and you don't see your browser window, it's really hard to notice that you got a new message, especially if you're running a lot of applications. So we've got some interesting solutions for that. They'll probably come pretty soon, but there are some things like that. Another one was file transfer. Meebo, Yahoo, AOL, Google, they all have web IM in one form or another themselves. None of them have file transfer. We just released it. The reason is file transfer was one of those things that people said, web IM, file transfer close to impossible. We figured out a way to do it. We used Amazon S3. There are things that are just harder to do by virtue of not being software, but ultimately you figure out a way to get around them.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, voice video will be another challenge, right? Getting really good kind of, you know, Skype-like quality of voice video chat, that's a really tough one to do in a web browser, too.
Why do it?
Well, iChat does it, and we've tinkered around with messing with that before.
No, that's a great service and everything, but for in a web browser, I don't really want a voice and I mean, I'm fine with having an application that does that. So why do it? So the portability still exists?
It's the same reason, you know, why Mevo.com. When we first launched Mevo.com, people said, why do you need web-based instant messaging? I mean, can't it just be software? That's fine. But it's kind of like, why do you need Hotmail for email as opposed to Outlook? And it really is about portability and the same experience. When we first launched, all of our users, for the most part, were using us at school and at work. Right? It was like, I can't get software at school and work, but I can get Mebo. That's going to get me on instant messaging. Mm-hmm. And then what we started seeing is the nights and weekends started really filling in. And so people would find us at school and work, but they actually preferred the web-based experience because it's faster, it's easier. It doesn't make you install anything, or you don't have to upgrade because we just auto-upgrade you every time we have an upgrade because it's a website. You just load the website. So there are a lot of reasons for users why they like that web-based experience. And then there are things that we can just do that software can't. Like, we can have your chat logs follow you everywhere you go. You're at work, you're at school, you go home, you have a complete history of everybody you've talked to, and you can look up that phone number that they IM'd to you that you forgot. We can give you the same, you know, user experience. Like, I have the Cartel background screen. It's a band that we promoted set to my Mebo site. It's because they have this really cool, like, orange tree there, and I think it looks nice, right? And so anywhere I go, I get that same experience. So there are a lot of reasons why people just end up liking a web solution as opposed to a software solution.
I noticed that you're not using HTTPS or secure socket layers in communication with Mebo. Why is that?
So it's an option for users. If they go to https.mebo, mebo.com, they will get an SSL version of Mebo, but it's definitely more expensive for us. So it's something that we told the users, hey, it's there if you want it. We do encrypt your password no matter what. So passwords are always protected, even on the non-SSL version of Mebo.
How do you encrypt the password for through sending it?
So it's interesting. We used to do RSA keys in the JavaScript, and JavaScript is the language that we use in the web browser to make all this stuff work. And we got that to encrypt the passwords on the fly. Now we actually have a small little SSL box so you're actually putting your password into an SSL box on the non-SSL version of Mebo, and that keeps it encrypted. It's a faster solution that we moved to.
Okay. And is that MD5?
I don't know.
You're the CEO, not the CTO. That's totally
yep.
fine. It's interesting. Earlier we were talking about what we use in the web and everything, and I basically have three different internet-capable applications traditionally on my machine that I run all the time. A web browser, an email client, and a chat client that you know includes all of them. And I've recently, because of the Mebo using it so much, I've taken out I don't launch my chat anymore. I now just launch my browser and then log in to that page. And it's definitely a change for me. It's a little bit of, I feel like it's great. It's exactly what I want, except that it still feels a little buggy to me. Like, we had some trouble earlier. Writer couldn't actually get in the chat room. There's some problems with it. And I'm assuming that's because you're writing kind of high-end apps for web applications or web browsers.
It's pretty much exactly it. We're really stretching the web browser further than it was probably meant to go. and so we've used this technique people call Ajax, and JavaScript is the kind of core language that was originally a language meant just for like basic stuff. And instead, people figured out how to write applications using JavaScript. And so that's what we've done. Especially if you're in Safari on the Mac, we support Safari, but that's been a particularly tough one for us to get completely bug-free.
Do you guys not have a lot of Macs in-house?
No, we actually do have a fair number of Macs in-house. It's just that Safari is a relatively difficult browser to get to operate perfectly when you're doing a super Ajax-heavy site.
Firefox is great with Ajax. Firefox is probably the fastest experience.
What about Internet Explorer?
And Internet Explorer is 80% of our users.
Oh, wow.
And so we pay a lot of attention to making sure that Internet Explorer is also really, really solid.
Well, I want to ask some technical questions, but I don't think I'll delve into it because...
I got a feature request for you, Seth.
Fire.
When Lyle mentioned this, and it's exactly it's the case for me, too. When I boot my machine in the morning, I have to remember to open a browser and log into Meebo.
Yep.
Give me a checkbox, because I'm an idiot user. I don't want to think about it, and put it in the startup menu for me.
Yep. Now, what's interesting is that will require a little bit of software.
Right.
But we've had that request enough that we'll probably figure something out there.
Couldn't somebody else produce the software that does that? I mean...
They could. There are actually a couple of companies out there who've come to us and said, hey, guys, we'd love to, you know, we have this kind of tray icon thing, and it's generic, and we'd love to make it for Meebo, too. There are some things where we do use outside technology providers, like the storage for file transfers. That was a no-brainer. Amazon's got a great offering. For something like a tray icon, that is probably something better done by us, just because there's so many things that have to make it custom-tailored to instant messaging. And then we can put something out that the users are really going to love.
Oh, that same icon that can start you up automatically would also allow for alerts to happen.
Yeah, you can solve two problems.
Definitely true. Two problems solved.
All right, GeekSpeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. KOSP co-sponsors the Taste of SLV on Sunday, September 16th. That's tomorrow. Highlands Park and Ben Lomond. Relax among the redwoods. Sample fine food and wine from local producers and bid on your favorite items in live and silent auctions. This year's auction items include vacations, musicals, and rare Under the Santa Cruz Boardwalk tour with Boardwalk President. For more information and tickets, call 336-2857 or just visit ccslv.org.
Hey, we've got a caller on line two, it looks like, who's got maybe a technical question for us.
Oh, we're out of time for doing tech questions. Oh,
man.
Unfortunately. A little time to wrap up with you, Seth. Our guest today is the co-founder of Meebo.com, Seth Sternberg. He's co-founder and CEO currently. Prior to Meebo, Seth worked at IBM in corporate development, leading M&A transactions, and working on strategy and venture capital investments. Seth flies airplanes, rides motorcycles, and rollerblades, and he also majored in political science at Yale. So, Seth, one thing to close out the show to agree with us, how did you get involved in doing web application development and running such a successful company?
Sure. So I think the first company I tried to start was in high school, and I failed. And I probably tried to start five or six companies in between high school and when Elaine, Sandy, and I put Meebo out. And it was just find a really, really great team. Elaine and Sandy are brilliant people, and they're really good at writing software applications for the web or web applications. So it's just, you know, getting hooked up with some really, really great people who are passionate about the same stuff that you are.
Seth, thank you so much for joining GeekSpeak today.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
Take care. We'll see you online. Tune in for This American Life, Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio. Broadcasting in HD radio on 88.9 FM, this is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto, streaming live and podcasting at KUSP.org. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. For KUSP and for GeekSpeak, my name is Lyle Troxell.
You just listened to another episode of GeekSpeak via our podcast. Would you do us a favor? Please go to your favorite podcasting index site, whether it be iTunes, Dig.com, Odeo, or another site, and write a review or give us a vote to let others know what you think about GeekSpeak. Thanks, that'd really help us out. GeekSpeak is supported by PreownedCar.com, PreownedCar.com, where anyone can post their vehicle for sale or browse to purchase a pre-owned car from other car owners. More information available at PreownedCar.com. This is Lyle Troxell for KUSP. Thanks for listening.